Are you feeling a bit animated? Well, come on over to the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to animation, Japanese culture, and all things anime. With a true industry perspective, we're always diving deeper than school uniforms and tentacle monsters. Join us on the Wicked Anime Podcast, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. It's Wicked A!
The following program, Flame On, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. My name is Pat. I'm the Talking Bearskin Rog, and I am joined today by BJ.
Hey, what's up?
And Eric.
Hey, how's it going?
And we are here to do a little post-Halloween movie review.
The spoopy episode.
Ooh. This has been a long time in the planning stages, and we're finally getting around to doing it.
Because somebody just watched it.
Listen, if more people on this show had watched the movie, I would have had to go and see it myself, because otherwise, at one point, it was just going to be BJ talking to himself.
I mean, I do that all the time. No, you don't. Shut up.
So, for those of you who have not guessed what our first topic is, we're doing two movie reviews for you here on this post-Halloween holiday spectacular. We're going to start with It, the 2017 film, based on the 1986 novel by Stephen King. The full title, which was revealed after it opened, is It Chapter 1. It's a retelling of this classic Stephen King novel that was also adapted into a miniseries in 1990.
Sounds correct.
Yes.
With Dr. Frankenfurter in a...
Tim Curry.
In a clown costume. He dressed up for Halloween and then stumbled into a new movie.
I mean, it was like a Bozo the Clown sort of outfit.
Yeah, it was super kind of silly, but it worked for the time. So we've been holding off on this because we wanted to do a little bit more of a deep dive than we'd be able to give it the attention in a regular Flame On episode. And I like I said, I'd originally not planned on seeing this movie, but when we kind of were planning out this weekend's worth of movie viewing, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see it and join in this conversation. But before I speak on any of it, because I'm pretty sure I have the least amount of knowledge of anything It, we will start with BJ. What is your background with the book, the miniseries, and all of this going into this 2017 adaptation?
So, It was the first book I actually ever read cover to cover.
Oh, okay.
I somehow stumbled upon it in fourth grade in the library, and I don't think it was supposed to be in the section I was in. But I was like, oh, hey, this looks creepy. And right after I read It, that's when I got into like Goosebumps and Fear Street and all those horror novels. So I went into the movie having seen the miniseries back in 1990, and I went into it having read the book, and then I think there was like I watched a couple of Stephen King interviews about it, because he was like, when I wrote this book, I was on a lot of drugs and got away with a lot of things I shouldn't have. But going into the movie, I was actually pretty excited because the miniseries it's iconic. Like it's a Tim Curry role. It's a big Tim Curry role. Nobody remembers anybody else in that movie, but everybody remembers Tim Curry. And going into this one, I was pretty excited. And I know a lot of people were just like, but it's not Tim Curry. And I'm like, yes, but it looks really fucking good.
Yeah, and I think you have to account for the many, 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 many years that have passed that you are able to kind of up the visual aspect of it. Yeah. So, iconic role or not, I think done right, it's going to give you that overall feeling, just because visually so much technology has come forward and advanced that I think it works. So in comparison to, and obviously with this being chapter one, there is a chapter two in the works for about 2 years from now. In September of 2019 is the tentative scheduled release date for It Chapter Two. What was your feeling on how did they compare? How did the miniseries compare to the current movie?
So the miniseries took place in the 1950s, around the time where the book took place. Mm-hmm. So the miniseries took place in 1950. The kids are adults in like the late 80s or mid 80s. In the miniseries. So with the movie, they moved that up. So the movie takes place in the early 80s, and then...
Late 80s. 88
is when Georgie disappears. Yes. So that's, yeah. So 88 into 89, yeah, somewhere
October,
in there.
October of 88 into September of 89, I believe.
Yeah.
Which you can tell by the movie marquee.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
changes from Batman...
To Nightmare on Elm Street or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I paid, that like caught in my eye. And
on the video game, Street Fighter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So there are a lot of timepiece references, but it makes sense because if you want to contemporize this story, moving it forward to where it would sit in place for when the next chapter comes out. It's going to be a couple years off, but it'll yeah. be close enough where it's like, oh, this is present day. Like it'll have that same kind of feeling. But aside from the time jump, what were your takeaways? What did the movie do better?
I think the movie for me did better with character development significantly. Okay. And it did a better, because like with the miniseries, you have the Losers Club, but it's the 1950s idea of a loser, which is pretty much everybody was pretty much weird in the 1950s. Just like in the 80s, I wouldn't be able to pick out a gay person in the 80s from from just a regular person in the 80s, because it's just everybody's very, very contradictive on everything.
Yeah.
So I like the fact they moved it up. I really like the fact that they changed it to the 80s, because if you have somebody under the age of like 30 going into it and it takes place in the 50s, a lot of them are just going to be like I don't understand, why don't they just pick up a phone, or like why don't they just do this, cuz well like you want, if you go too far back, it's hard to really connect with the characters. And everybody my age will really connect with these characters because we lived through the 80s. We remember a lot of this stuff. And I lived in like Auburn, Alabama when I was a kid. So I didn't live in a major area. I remember going through like chicken farms during the summer and stuff like that. So it's I really like that about the movie. The other thing I really like about the movie is the dialogue. I don't know if that's just because writing it has a better flow to it these days, but like the dialogue in the 50s movie for certain characters were really, I don't know, not forced, but very drab. Like the reason why Pennywise is such like kind of a beloved character in the original one is because he had all the best lines. He really had all the best lines in the original, in the miniseries. And like all the other characters, I could pick out the characters, but I really couldn't. They really don't have anything memorable. The child actors they had back then didn't really bring anything memorable. I could pretty much pick out every single one of the characters in the movie and be able to give you like at least enough of a backstory that you could be like, oh yeah, that was a thing in the 80s. Oh yeah, that was like my favorite running gag in the movie was Ben and his love for New Kids on the Block.
Which they didn't hit on all that often.
No.
But when they called back to it, it definitely was a cute little nod to his outsider-ness.
And it washes down the tension just enough. Yeah. So you actually kind of like I know at one point I kind of forgot it was a horror movie.
It doesn't play that up as much as it could.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, Eric, what is your background with It, the novel / miniseries / obviously you've seen the 2017 adaptation, but where do you fall in the spectrum of It-ness?
Well, I mean, I read It back in junior high because in elementary school, I was always ordering like the R.L. Stine books from the book orders. And I just gradually got into
Scholastic Book Fair.
Exactly.
Oh. You got that one like folded flyer that has
And I never understood why they marketed like Fear Street and all those R.L. Stine books to grade schoolers. That doesn't seem to fit. You're always solving a murder. Whatever. But then I just graduated to like the Stephen King books and read It, and it was pretty scary. And it wasn't until later in high school that I rented the miniseries. I remember getting two VHSs.
Ooh,
I know.
That was a long miniseries.
It was. Having to switch the VHS.
But you know them. You know those old VHSs when they would do the miniseries were like that. The shortest VHSs they could find. Because remember there was always like... There was like the 2-hour VHS, the 4-hour VHS, the 6. Are you too young for that, BJ?
No. I remember this.
Because I'm like, wait a minute. I'm really dating myself here.
No. I remember this because I would spend summers at my grandparents' house and I would go to the video store and rent movies.
Mm-hmm. But the blank ones, you always had to, like, if you were going to buy blank VHS tapes to record something, you always had to pay attention to which one you bought.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you bought the 2-hour one and then you had to record a bunch of stuff, it was like, shit, I'm out of tape.
Yep.
Oh god.
But it always felt like when they had multiple VHSs, it was always like the shortest amount of like VHS tape that they could.
It was always
in
like a 45-minute one. Because does anybody remember the 12th Kingdom, that miniseries?
No, they put
that on VHS, and that was like a 7 or 8 episode miniseries, and there was like 6 VHS tapes for that whole damn thing.
And we're like, here's your 47 VHS tapes for this miniseries. Now it's on like something, a chip, you know, smaller than my damn thumbnail. Mm-hmm. You damn young whippersnappers.
Oh.
Sorry. That's my Oregon Trail generationist coming out. So back to your VHS from Blockbuster, I hope.
No, or was this local mom and pop? I grew up in a small town, so we only had the mom and pop store.
Oh, no video warehouse?
No.
Oh,
nope. JT's movies.
Do they say be kind, rewind?
I think they had those stickers. Oh. Yeah, but it was always $1 a day. That's how much you had to pay.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that rhymed in way too many ways.
Oh, no, absolutely not, sir. No.
So
we'll give you Eric's home address to send hate mail to.
The miniseries I thought was pretty faithful to the book from what I can remember. I only watched it once. It was just kind of when it got to the end when he became the big monster that it was like, wow, the technology for graphics doesn't really match what was in my head when I read it.
Yeah.
So
spoilers.
What?
Oh, wait, no, I don't know. I'm like, are you talking about when they were kids, or is this the second half? Have I not seen this? Oh, okay. Stop spoiling a 27-year-old miniseries.
Oh no. But yeah, as far as remembering any of the characters other than Pennywise, it's kind of difficult because Pennywise is just always what is out there, projected as the image from everything. It's always memed. It's always everything.
Yeah.
So I feel that the movie grounded the kids and made them bigger characters in their own right than the miniseries did.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I've never read the book. I've never seen the miniseries. I originally had no intention of seeing this movie, as you can tell by the fact that I saw it at the beginning of November when it came out in September. I had to find like the one movie theater that was still showing it that wasn't the Altamont Picture Show.
Oh,
I paid my $7.46 for a matinee showing to go see it, And that was me and one other person in the theater. Thankfully, he was already sitting like 3 or 4 rows closer to the screen, and I just sat all the way in the back.
You didn't have to kick him out of your seat like we did with those girls today.
We didn't know that there was reserved seating. Shut up, bitch.
Right?
When you buy your ticket, they make you pick a seat. Anywho, we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. So I was like, I went into this kind of going, I don't really watch horror movies aside from Saw 1 through 6.
Yes.
I haven't seen the 7th one, and I haven't seen Jigsaw. So the first 6 Saw movies are probably the closest thing to like a horror movie franchise that I've ever watched in my life. Like, I have not seen a lot of your classic horror movies. No Friday the 13th, no Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh,
like,
wow.
None of those.
Oh, you missed that whole like 80s and 90s slasher generation. Oh, man.
I was not raised on those movies, and it never was something that appealed to me. And people had told me, well, this one's, it's scary at times, but it's more comedic.
It's actually, if you took Pennywise out of the movie completely, it's just a coming
of
age.
You have the Lost Boys? All I saw was, like, it literally made me think of Stranger Things, because you have boys on bikes.
Yep.
And I know that that's really just 80s nostalgia porn.
It is. I mean, I grew up as a boy on a bike.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it made me think of, and which I giggled to myself when the kid from Stranger Things turned around and said, who invited Molly Ringwald? And I was like, oh,
yeah,
because this is totally The Breakfast Club meets The Lost Boys meets like Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, it was like an amalgamation. And mind you, I've only seen one of those things, but it really did, like, it just felt like such an 80s movie. And I know that's when the book was written, so it really, it permeates through it, and it worked. The only, and I'll get to this later, there was one portion of the storyline that really did affect me emotionally. None of the scary parts really made me jump. So, like, it was a very interesting movie-going experience for me to go from, like, oh, I don't want to go to a scary movie, to seeing this and going, all right, I'll see Chapter 2 when it comes out, whatever. Like, it's not such a big deal. So I don't really have anything to compare it to. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good movie, and I can see why it affected and has been such a thing in the pop culture consciousness.
And I think this is, I'm pretty sure this is the best, this is the best, this is, this horror movie is, has the best opening in history for any horror movie ever. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was a really big opening weekend.
And even, and it's worldwide, like, same thing. It was very interesting because I knew it would probably do well in the U.S., but I didn't think it would perform all that well worldwide, but apparently it did.
Well, so for some numbers, it's grossed over $671 million worldwide.
Wow.
Unadjusted for inflation, it is the highest grossing R-rated horror film of all time. The highest grossing horror film internationally. The second highest grossing horror film overall after The Sixth Sense, and the second highest grossing R-rated film of all time after Deadpool. So,
wow.
Yeah, and it's also the highest grossing horror film of 2017, the highest grossing R-rated film of 2017, and the 9th highest grossing film overall of 2017. So it did extremely well, which I don't think anybody thought it would do. Not that they thought it would fail. But I don't think anybody associated with the movie was like, this is going to be this breakout smash hit of the year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody thought it was going to be this good.
They probably wanted Dark Tower to do better than it.
Oh,
because
probably.
Dark Tower, they could have stretched on for a lot more movies.
And yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, and Eric, you and I talked about this before, it wouldn't surprise me if they pulled Chapter 2 into Chapters 2 and 3. I know there's not a lot of, you know, you obviously have one piece of source material, but at the same time, look at 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. That went through the book.
Yeah.
Now we have season two for no apparent reason other than it was a cash cow for them. Mm-hmm. So it would not surprise me if they try to, I don't necessarily think that they will, but it wouldn't shock me in this day and age with how much money that they can bring in if they try to stretch out and make it a two-part movie. For fuck's sake, we got how many Hobbit films?
We really could have just done one.
From a little book? We got three movies out of it.
We really could have just done one.
Yeah.
I hope they don't do that.
Yeah. I think the overall product would suffer if they did it that way. But capitalism being capitalism, it wouldn't surprise me. I will say, so now we'll go into kind of talking a little more in depth about the movie. So if you haven't seen it, don't want to be spoiled, you don't want a 27 year gap between the miniseries and this new adaptation spoiled for you, then stop here.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you picked this episode, but
get on out.
You know. So real quick, one of the things that affected me the most, I'll start on a positive note and we'll circle around for positive, and then we'll throw out any feedback or critiques we may have, because I have really only one critique, but we'll start with positive because I'm trying to be uplifting. Like I said, the fears and the horror pieces of it didn't really bother me all that much. There was a lot going on in this movie. There were a lot of subplots.
Oh, yeah.
Because
there's just a lot of characters, and you have to connect with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have
to. Well, but
they really did try to. But it also left a lot of threads out there, which mm-hmm. don't always pay off.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one kid's mother, like that whole story, like it didn't feel like it had any reason to be there. But it was just a way for you to be able to connect with his hypochondria-ness.
Well, and actually, since you have never read the book or seen the miniseries, there's actually a big reason for that.
Well, but that's the thing. But when you're putting that much into one long-ass film, because I didn't realize it was over 2 hours long. It's almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You sacrifice some of that information when you're trying to put it all together, which you could have thinned it out a little bit, maybe. But the one thread that really hit me hard was Bev's backstory. When she comes home and her dad like grabs her arm and he's talking to her, and it's like, oh God, this implied incest is really disturbing.
At one point, implied at
well,
any
no,
point.
At that point, it's all implied because you're like, I understand the subtext of this, but it's still not outright. Maybe there's something different. And then you get towards the climax of the movie and he basically throws her to the ground and starts climbing on top of her. And you're just like, oh, dear God. When she gets that, like, that strength to be like, you know, you're still my little girl. No! And then, she, you know, like, it just, that was gripping for me.
Uh-huh.
And the way it was done. And the actress playing Bev, like, really brought that together. Like, it really, it was impactful. I definitely connected with her piece of that much more than any of the other fears. And when they were facing off with it, and he was, like, would turn around and, like, blah, 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 and then he would become, like, whatever that one's fear was. And it was her dad's head. Like, and you knew that was what it was going to be, but it was just, like, oh.
Yeah.
And then for her to just be like, you know, I forget if she like hit it with a pipe or whatever, but
she stabbed him through the mouth.
Oh, that's right.
She immediately
She
was done with that nonsense.
Yes.
She was like, fuck off.
That absolutely felt like that was such a strong arc throughout the entire movie that mm-hmm. didn't have a lot of time with the movie.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was in dribs and drabs, and even the blood scene, the Carrie scene in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
The ring meets Carrie is how I like to look at that.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
The hair comes out of the drain pipe, and then it's just like, they're all gonna laugh at you, and you know, Eric Michaud pops out and he's, you know, doing his since Carrie monologue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in that scene, there wasn't much to their interaction that was negative. It just kind of was there, and it's like, oh, you don't see all the blood? Okay, and then move on. And then you get that last piece. But that was probably overall like one of the strongest fear-based like relationship and cycles out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, what's your big highlight or takeaway from the new adaptation?
I don't know. I just really enjoyed just about everything they did. I know that's very specific and makes great radio, but I thought all the fears were well developed, even the one they changed from the mummy to the picture of the lady with the flute.
Ooh.
I thought she was freaky in all the right ways.
Stephen King in an interview said that was his favorite change.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was his absolute favorite change from the new movie.
This one time at painting band camp.
Stuck a flute. Well,
oh, no. She stuck her head in a grinder. I don't know.
I think probably I feel the scariest fear was the one they probably spent the least on, which was, and I can't remember his name, but the little black boy.
Oh, Mike.
Yeah.
That's Mike. Yeah.
Oh.
And the whole, you really don't know what the fear is of his parents burning to death for a long time.
Yeah. Yes, it wasn't clear until like a plethora of burnt hands come flying out of it at him. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Because he only mentions it once and that's it.
Yeah. It's really quick, and
even the Stranger Things kid with the clown fear,
Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah, sure, that guy. It's the kid from Stranger Things, which probably helped make me think of Stranger Things a lot more. when he's riding around on a bike, and I'm like, wait a minute, wasn't he the one that was kidnapped? Or no, was he not the one that was kidnapped?
No, okay, good.
So that means that he was on a bike through most of the show. So, okay.
Yeah.
It shows you how much I related to Stranger Things.
And it was funny, the people from Stranger Things said when he came back to shoot the second season after shooting it, he had the foulest mouth, and they actually had to write it into the script that they started swearing because he wouldn't stop swearing because he did it so much during it.
Oh, yeah.
He was my least favorite character out of the entire ensemble. His character, actor, he did a good job with it because that was the role he was supposed to play.
Well, he's the one that's the most asshole-ish out of the group.
Yeah, he's definitely. Yeah.
He's not meant to be that one that you're sitting there. You're rooting for them all, but he's probably, you're like, eh, if he were to get killed, I'm kind of okay with it because he's a dick. BJ, I know you've sang praises like Eric did before the movie, but what was your biggest like takeaway or happiness from it?
Actually it was Finn Wolfhard's character Richie. Well, it's because I hated Richie in the miniseries. He was supposed to be, because in the book he's kind of the funny asshole. Like everybody thinks he's an asshole, but they're like, he's a genuinely decent human being. He has a mouth on him. And in the book and in the miniseries, I never got that. I was just annoyed by him.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, okay, we get it. Like, you think you're funny, but you're really not. And I really liked Richie in the movie because he doesn't have that real face-to-face with Pennywise until much later. And the whole time, he's just like, I love the fact that some of his jokes are funny, but some of them, like, all the other kids are like, like when he puts his hand up to get a high five and Stan puts his hand down and is like, no, stop. Like everybody's like, stop it. And I think what resonated with me a lot is the fact that at the end, that big final throwdown, because I think that was my absolute favorite moment, when the kids are essentially physically and emotionally conquering their fears. Because they're laying waste to this goddamn clown. They are fucking him up left and right. And I love it because that little diatribe he has where he's just standing there and he's just like, I fucking told you, Bill. I didn't want to go down here. You have me walk through shitty water, go to a fucking crack house, and now I gotta kill this fucking clown. And I was like, it was like, welcome to the Losers Club, asshole. And it was just like, it was the bell. That was the bell for that throwdown. And it was, I like Richie a lot, but I think the very top thing for me was that big final throwdown at the end. Cause I felt empowered by it. Like, mm-hmm. Beverly literally, like, stabbing the visage of her father through the face. It turned into the leper and threw up all over the other kid. And he's like, I'll fucking kill you. Like,
yeah,
all of them being like, we've had enough. And them essentially starving him out was I thought that was phenomenal. That was probably one of my favorite moments.
So now, comments, critiques, epiphanies, revelations from the movie. I'll start it off because I enjoy being negative. It's taken me so long to get to this. The only thing that bothered me really about the movie, one minor thing, and it is just kind of overall not having been exposed to it until now, is Georgie being such an iconic image,
mm-hmm.
Especially considering how many people were in fucking yellow raincoats on Halloween. It's incredible how little, like, I understand he has a bigger impact for the movie because that's what shapes Bill's entire, like, trying to find his brother.
Mm-hmm.
But for just being that little bit of it, like just that opening scene, I was like, oh. And I know he pops up sporadically through this movie, but I felt like with seeing so many people dressed up as him, I thought it was going to be more of a part of this thing.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And maybe it's more in the miniseries. Maybe it's more in the book. I don't know. But
it's really not. It's just that very iconic first scene.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Barb where everybody grabs. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit. It's how the book starts. It's how the miniseries starts. It's how the movie starts. It's just that first introduction to Pennywise.
And also, it's... This is a thing that I used to get annoyed with. It's something I get annoyed with movies that are based on older movies or books when they like place a kid there. Mm-hmm. Because I have a friend who, if like I was at the day the earth stood still, they just like Jaden Smith was just kind of tossed into the movie. And a friend of mine's like, I had to go see it. And I was like, why? I had to know if the kid was okay. And That's also one of the things. It's like it's a parent's worst nightmare. It is like literally the worst nightmare. Your kid just goes around the block and then never comes home again. But like this movie's like, oh no, he gone. Like you get to see it right up front.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I guess it's more the fact that it's the match that that lights the fire.
And I feel like they can't really reboot this in another 27 years.
Oh, no.
Because if you bring it up to, like, current time now to start the movie, that kid would never go out by himself.
Oh, no. No,
I was like, wow, this is totally the 80s. He would never be playing
with a paper boat.
Yeah. Well, that too. But I was like, this little kid just, like, runs out to go play in the rain. And I'm like, oh, this was totally the 80s at that point.
Yeah, maybe
like,
if it was Pokemon Go.
Maybe
still mom's gonna be like,
exactly, there's a helicopter
we got your legendaries
nearby.
Down here
we paid too much goddamn money for that phone for you to go traipse him out in the rain with it, like,
pretty much. So my big negative, which took me out of the movie, which that's got a lot of suspension of disbelief for this entire thing, but Pennywise's attack motions. The CGI for that was ridiculous. Like when he would do like those, like it was like that crazy disjointed, like, like at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like it.
Oh, like when he runs after Bill in the water and he's like,
whenever there's like a quick motion,
it's
quick motion. Yeah. It's in the individual encounters, not in the fight. Like, yeah. Or not even like any of the other times that Pennywise does anything. When he's standing there with the fucking like upside down triangle of balloons, any of that stuff is fine.
Yeah, where it's almost just missing frames of film.
Yes, yes. I know exactly what you mean.
Get what they're doing. It just came across really awkward for me.
Yeah,
and threw me. I was like, oh. Like if they just had him lunge
mm-hmm.
at the camera, like with one fluid motion, like sped up, I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. Like that's like your jump scare. But when you start like the whole like, I'm like, that just doesn't work for me.
It's something they did in the remake of House on Haunted Hill where the spirits would like do this weird shudder, like their heads would shake really fast. And I was like, okay, they don't have to do that. It's already unsettling enough.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, in The Ring, Samara does it sometimes, too.
But she is coming out of film also. Like, they have that film piece, so it kind of works.
Yeah.
When it happened in the projector, that was creepy as fuck.
I could poop a diamond. I could poop a fucking diamond from that goddamn scene.
That was one thing. But, like, in the basement, in the flooded basement, it didn't...
He did the dorky clown run.
Yeah.
And it was like, if they just hadn't, if they honestly had kept his head still and just had him scream running at and just left everything else the same, mm-hmm. I think it would have, it was already scary enough because he was literally almost on Bill at the stairs. But like, no, I see what you mean. That weird head shake thing. I don't know why that's.
Yeah. That was probably my biggest like critique or like takeaway where I was like, this just doesn't work. And it's just in those couple of scenes when it's at one-on-one and they want that, like, they need to, there's a distance and they want to cut that distance in, like, a second and a half. And it becomes this, like, sped up, like, we'll take out every three scenes we'll have, like, or every three frames will be where we cut this. And that was my only real, overall, like, that was my only real negative. BJ, were there any critiques or things that you thought could have been done better?
Actually, the one thing I think they could have done better, you had mentioned it, the parents, the adults in the town.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing that in the book, and I don't know if this is revealed later in the book or sooner, is that Pennywise affects adults. He can feed off of adults. Like he eats a couple of teenagers, but he prefers kids because their fears are simpler and he feeds off the fear before he actually physically eats them. The thing is adults' fears are more complicated, but he can still affect them and he can foster an environment to make it easier for children to be afraid. So like
it's hard to become rising mortgage costs.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just one of those things. So
what your 401k is empty.
So he he pushes the parents' own neuroses and their own insecurities, so they push it up on the kids. Like Bev's dad.
Oh,
so Bev's
that
dad
makes the hypochondriac make more sense.
The hypochondriac then. Mother. The way the pharmacist was a little bit creepy on Bev. Like because that comes into play later on when they go back to the town as adults and one of them encounters the pharmacist again and the pharmacist is like, I've got your prescriptions. And he's like, but those aren't real. And he's like, I have your prescriptions. And it's just very much like you realize that Pennywise, the same thing with the bully's father.
Yeah,
the father bullied the bully, so the bully is bullying the weaker kids. It shit rolls downhill.
Yeah, which and to go back to that for a second, that made me understand the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand why that same thing was playing during Bev's scene where she sneaks past her dad, because that same show is on. Because you hear, you know, them talking about, oh, you know, in the sewers we offload town here.
Oh, come down to the sewers, bring your friends.
Which leads into the ring carry, the carry ring scene, because you hear that on the TV,
mm-hmm.
and then she goes into the bathroom and she's reading the card, and then the whole thing happens. But I didn't quite understand it there. I totally got it from the bully's scene,
mm-hmm.
unless it's because of the fact like he was trying to get Bev to be that person and it didn't work, so then it became like, okay, well then let's try this guy, because is it the rage versus fear?
It's so if you notice that Pennywise would start on the kids when they were in like something, someplace that either should be secure, should be safe, like with Stan reading the Torah and he wasn't studying right, like he should feel safe at a synagogue with his dad. Right, his dad's like in the next room. He should feel safe there, but he doesn't. And then the moment there was that one little thing, which was the picture of the twisted woman. Boom, there you go. When Ben was in the library, he preferred to be inside in the library, away from outside with the bullies and stuff. Boom, Pennywise there. And if you pay really close attention, I caught this on like my third watch. If you're gonna watch the movie, pay very, very, very close attention to the librarian when he's following the umbrella. Not the umbrella, the balloon. She's watching him and smiling. She's leering in the background at him, and whether she's actually Pennywise in disguise or she's just affected by him because she's the one that brought him all those books, too.
True.
So.
And how many times is that damn picture in that book when he keeps flipping the pages and it just keeps on zooming in, like, inch by inch at that damn tree?
How many times is that picture in there? Thing as the projector.
I know, but it was just kind of funny that it was like, turn the page, same. God damn.
And that was a callback to the miniseries because when he flips to that. To that chapter in the miniseries, they look at the picture and Pennywise is dancing around in the picture and then actually pops up in the picture and is like, hey, what's up? But yeah, I wish they had pushed more on the fact that Pennywise affects the adults the same way as in a different way than the kids, and it wants to foster it, and it's the whole town. Like, I think even Mike's grandfather, who was like, you're an outsider, you need to make a decision, you know. And Mike was able to push through the fear of that and save his ass from the bully.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Henry? Yeah.
Yeah.
Henry, the and I also liked when they fucking had a rock war with the bullies. I thought that was great. Because I've done that before.
I get that, like, the book was written in the 80s. But it really, with today's social climate, It was impactful. That was the other part that was really impactful, was like the racism, the blatant racism in small town America. And you know, it's there, but it's just like, it was done in such a way, like, it really hurt. And I wish they had done more with Mike's character, but you know, the fact that it had the attention it did, and he was probably one of the least developed out of all of them, but
and that'll change in chapter two a lot because he's the one that brings them all back together.
Gotcha. Okay. Eric, did you have any critiques or negative takeaways from the movie?
Not that I can remember. I only saw it opening weekend, so by now just the more memorable parts are the ones that are sticking with me versus any sort of nitpicking critiques.
Oh, bitch, trust me. Listen, nitpicking stays with you. I still shit talk Interstellar. How long ago did that come out?
You didn't have any good takeaways from Interstellar. You only had your nitpicks.
Were there any shirtless men in it? Yeah, no, probably. I don't think there were any takeaways.
And I gotta mention the one big difference between the book and everything else. The book had some, because all the kids are teenagers and coming of age, the book had a lot of sexual themes.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about the orgy.
What, the orgy?
There's the orgy that the kids have in the sewer after they beat it. And then there's apparently one of the bullies. I think it's the one that got attacked in the sewer in the movie. He's actually gay.
Patrick.
He's actually gay. And
it's the only name I remember of the damn movie.
And he and Henry, like jack off all the time together in the book, and he makes a move for Henry, and Henry's like, I will fucking kill you, fuck off. Like,
it couldn't be the one with the hat because he was the cuter of the bullies.
I think he gets eaten by a werewolf in the book.
Oh
yeah, I missed the werewolf.
See, well, they did a callback to the werewolf when they're in the house and it was going after the hypochondriac kid. Yeah. And it grew the claws.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of classic monster movie in the movie theater in town was showing the classic horror movies,
which would make sense for the Mummy, the '50s,
the werewolf, yeah. Frankenstein. I think it turns into Frankenstein and chases somebody at one point.
Because gotcha. At one point the kids like melt down all the silver they can find to make a silver, slingshot pebble, to attack the werewolf.
Gotcha. And Now, let me ask this, because I don't remember all the details right off the top of my head. Was there an actual murder at the bridge at one point in the original book?
Yes. So, actually, I think that was the opening, one of the opening, like, chapters. Henry and his gang are at a boardwalk, and they're hassling a gay couple, and they throw one of them over the boardwalk, and they're alive, but his boyfriend sees him get dragged under by Pennywise.
Gotcha. Okay. I was going to say, because that's actually based off of a real event.
Yeah.
That I knew that there was something associated with it, and I couldn't quite tell. And that's why when it got to the bridge and they started carving into Ben's stomach, I was like, oh, dear God. And then when it led to him just, you know, being saved and helped by the other kids, I was like, oh, okay, well, that obviously isn't what this was about. But I remember that article came out when the whole, like, Pennywise Babadook, like,
yeah,
they're in a relationship. And then people were like,
tap the brakes.
This is what this is about, and this is why, like, this shouldn't be. And then it, like, which is great to get that information, like, see, like, all that other stuff, because then it brings to light these real life events that were so horrible that they shaped a horror novel based off of, like, you know, the greatest atrocities that can be committed.
Yep.
Especially against, you know, outsiders or people that are different. But then I also look at it and go, these are fictional characters, and I really don't give a flying fuck what you do with them. Like,
yeah.
If you want to draw Pennywise and Babadook, you know, like, you want to do some fanfic or some slash fic or whatever, like, all right, whatever. Anywho, so let's rate this. I'm instituting right here, right now, a new movie rating system, because we're going to be talking about more movies, hopefully. We'll do this out of 5 flames. We'll do little fire, okay. Little fire symbols.
I was hoping it'd be little fires.
Little fires, little flames. From 1 to 5 flames, what would you give this movie, BJ?
I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
All righty. Eric?
Probably a solid 4.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a 4 also for pretty much my first ever, like, real, like, horror movie that's not... Saw. it was overall a pretty good film. So if you enjoyed it, if you want to dispute any of our comments, or you want to agree with us, or give any type of feedback, we accept all of that. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, all of the social media platforms. You can help support our show and our network, the Nerdy Show Network, by going to patreon.com/nerdyshow. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play Music, Stitcher, CastBox, I think, was one of the ones that got mentioned. A while ago, I put up a little post that said, hey, where do you listen to us? We want to know. And somebody had mentioned that. But go leave us a review, subscribe. The more that you review us, the better the chances are that people that don't know about our show will get to see our show pop up in recommendations. So we appreciate that oh so much. And you can find all of our social media links at flameonshow.com. We're going to be updating the website soon. I just have been busy. My own website is like a year and some change old, and I haven't touched it in forever. The only thing we update is the song list. It happens. So we are going to do a quicker B topic on this episode, on this movie review episode post Halloween.
So that was it, chapter 1, and now we're on chapter 2.
In 2 years, we'll be on chapter 2. So this morning, when we're recording this, it'll be a few days ago when you're listening, if you listen right away, or if you listen to this a year from now, it'll be much, much earlier than when you're hearing it. So this morning, BJ, Eric, and I had a little group movie date. And we saw Happy Death Day.
Let's go. It's your birthday. Let's go. It's your birthday.
I think 50 Cent is going to sue us now.
I'm pretty sure he's bigger fish to fry. Does he?
I would think
so. Is he doing anything?
Not. I don't think so.
Oh.
He's like, oh.
Oh, I remember his video game. The fighting game with all the rappers.
Shaq Fu?
No. Oh, no.
No.
Different black person, Eric.
Different black person. Stop being the racist at the table.
Don't make fun of Kazam.
Shazam with Sinbad? Wait, is that the one that doesn't exist or does exist?
I think Shazam is the one that doesn't exist, and Kazam is the one that does.
Is that the one with Shaq?
That's the one with Shaq that everybody thinks it's Sinbad.
So Shazam with starring Sinbad is the movie that everybody remembers.
That no one's ever seen. That's the true horror movie here.
Yes. So Happy Death Day is a film written by comic book scribe Scott Lobdell that he has been trying to get made for, I think, the better part of a decade.
You can believe that.
That finally came to fruition. And I guess, cliff note, elevator pitch for this movie is... Groundhog Day, but if the only way to restart the day was you got killed. So we start off with Tree.
Teresa.
Tree is our main protagonist. She wakes up in a dorm room bed and not knowing where she is, starts her day, and eventually ends up being murdered. Within the first, 15-ish minutes?
Oh, yeah. It's like the first 15 minutes.
Yeah,
solid.
It's
like,
fairly quick.
They kick it off pretty good, too.
Which then sets her back to reawakening in the dorm room with this college guy that she doesn't know and starting her day over.
September 18th, 2017.
Oh, was it September 18th?
September 18th, 2017, Monday.
In my head, I was like, oh, it's October 18th, and we share the same birthday, and I'm going to get killed next.
But actually, funny, the movie came out the Friday after my birthday. So the week of my birthday, this movie came out.
Oh, that's right. I was going to say, it was right around there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, because it was Friday the 13th.
Yep, Friday the 13th is when it came out, yeah.
Which is, I think, why it always associates with October in my head and not September. But... So Tree is set on a sort of pseudo supernatural quest to, after she kind of feels like she's going crazy the first couple times, with some help in at least one of the days that she awakens to, figures out that she needs to find out who is trying to kill her, and hopefully not reawaken the next day, reliving the same day.
Yeah.
Whether that means she's dead or... You know, it's Tuesday. It's up to debate in her head, but at least it wouldn't be the same day over again.
Yeah.
So, Eric, let's start with you. What did you think of the movie?
I thought it was a cute movie. It had a decent amount of sight gags and just kept your attention. I don't think it was the most amazing movie. I don't think it really needed to verbally do the callback to Groundhog Day.
I thought that was kind of cute.
I don't know.
Because, well...
Well, I mean, I feel like it should... It needs to be because they... I mean, that movie is pretty old, buddy. That movie is...
That's literally what I was about to say.
Yeah, that movie's pretty old.
On the opposite side of it, where... So, if you haven't seen the movie, again, I'm not sure why you would still be listening because, you know, we're going to spoil the shit out of it. at the end of the movie, as the camera starts to pull out, spoiler alert, she makes it through. She figures out who kills her and is able to then go on to... is sitting at the diner with this young, cute college co-ed that she ends up finding a connection with. And he goes, you know what this makes me think of? Groundhog Day. And she's like, what? And I feel like that is the audience stand-in for the majority of people that went and saw this movie.
Yeah, because everybody else in that theater with us were probably high school age.
Were they even? Because these girls that took our seats looked like they were 12.
Well, I saw them come into the theater before us, and I'm pretty sure one of their mothers bought all their tickets. So they, like... Mom didn't. Yeah, they didn't even pay for their tickets.
Was it a rated R movie?
Oh yeah.
Even PG-13. If they're under 13 or don't look 13, you gotta have somebody buy your ticket. Well, maybe. I don't know. There's a certain age cutoff with certain movies. I know that.
There's very few theaters that really enforce it. Really, R is the only thing most movie theaters enforce.
And in a movie theater with only, 35, 40 seats, that when you buy the ticket, you gotta pick your damn seat. They took our seats.
Right.
And they were like, oh, we didn't know there was assigned seating and we're just terrible people. And I was like, yes, you are. I didn't say that out loud because, you know, they were children. But
I just
still.
I just didn't hear them, and I would have agreed. I would have agreed. I don't care if they're children.
Listen, I've opened up my front door and told kids playing on my lawn to get off my lawn. Sorry, rephrase that. I said, you guys know this isn't your house, right? And then just stared at them blankly until they took their football and left, which was fantastic for me. I'm now an 80-year-old grandpa. I love it.
You're going to start talking to an empty chair?
It's cold. What time is it?
Yes, but only on stage at the RNC.
But no, I thought the movie did a good job of, I think, the mystery of trying to figure out who the killer was the most interesting part of the movie.
Which I felt cheated until they pulled the twist. And then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, having the serial killer
Tombs.
Be the killer seemed kind of like, oh,
easy, too easy.
It did, but it I was kind of like, oh, okay, like that was that little like clue dropped earlier on, because that same news report was mentioned briefly, but not knowing anything about how he's connected to her, which is kind of like, oh, this is whatever. And when they went back to it, I was like, oh, okay, I feel a little cheated because we have no investment in him trying to kill her.
It has nothing to do with her character. Like, I'm not saying
her growth.
Exactly.
It had to do, well, because I did like the fact when they showed the news report, all of his victims were all blonde girls that looked just like her. So that was the loose connection. That was the slight red herring they gave you.
But I mean, it doesn't have as much to do with her karma.
Correct.
True.
Yeah.
As it would if it was somebody she knew.
I was betting on the dad.
Yeah.
And hedging my bet with the roommate. That's why I should have whispered that too, so that I've at least felt somewhat vindicated.
See, because
I think it's the dad.
Yeah. Because like I'm from that generation that had the Scream movies,
it felt very in that vein of the late 90s, early 2000s slasher.
Yeah. And I was expecting multiple murderers. I was thinking it was everybody. I was thinking it wasn't just the one person. I think it was everybody, like, she fucking, like,
this is
wronged.
For the Night's Watch.
Too Brutus. I thought it was going to be one of those situations.
The only thing that bothered me a little bit is when you finally find out who the killer is, some of the physical acts don't equate. Like the pipe to the head and then you get right back up. Like,
yeah.
That's a little much. I will say this though. There were two points in this movie that actually made me kind of jump. The first time she gets attacked when he like drops out of nowhere right behind her, because there is such an audible a cue, because they all out of nowhere it's like boom, and it's like I was like, oh, like I literally jumped in my seat. It was like the one time a jump scare really worked, because I was jumping and scared. And then when she gets arrested and the cop is standing outside and the car comes speeding out of nowhere. Destroys him.
Oh yeah.
I was like, oh, oh my god.
He was a bag of broken pencils. Like,
and then they show him and you just like see the arms twisted in different directions.
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh, that's just a lot.
Well, do you think that any of the time, well, no, I guess it was her every time that killed Tree.
Except
for when Tree hung herself.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And well, because then they started doing the flashbacks where they showed her and she pulled the mask up. But so spoiler alert, her roommate is the one who kills her repeatedly until she kills her roommate in a day after, because you think that we get to a point.
Yeah, you literally
she goes
think,
through this redemptive arc.
She does the Bill Murray, I'm a better person now. I've grown.
Exactly. And I was like, okay, because when the movie started, and I know you're not supposed to like her, but she was over the top unlikable.
Oh, yeah, like, super fucking bitch. Like,
bad.
Like, stereotypically bad, which is, like, the worst kind of bad. It wasn't like she had something terrible done to her. No, she just was, like, a straight-up bitch.
I just expected the mask to come up and it just to say, karma. And just, like, she get repeatedly stabbed to death. Like,
I was half expecting it to be her. Like, a version of her that's not horrible, that just wants to kill all the horrible in her. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, she's terrible. Yeah. I did love the montage.
Yes.
The montage is probably
the best
thing.
We'll get to that in a second.
You gotta have a montage.
But, BJ, overall, what did you think of the movie?
I liked it. It's been a really, really long time since I've seen, like, I sat down and watched a slasher flick. I think the closest thing was, like, that weird remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. A couple years ago. I think it was, like, 6 years ago. They did a remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. And I think that was the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street and the remake of Friday the 13th. Those were the two. And that was, like, a long time ago. And I think that's the last time I watched a slasher flick that wasn't, like, a comedy slasher flick. That wasn't, like, something meant to be tongue-in-cheek. Like, this was meant to be a somewhat serious movie. They had some really good funny moments to kind of water down some of the tension. But, no, it's been a while. And there's a lot of themes at play in this one. The karma, the whole idea of, like, you only get one life. Like, you know, just there's a lot of themes in here that work, and you can pretty much view it almost every other way.
Yeah, for sure. And so we'll get back to the montage now. So at one point, Tree wakes up after being killed, and Carter?
Yeah, Carter.
She decides to open up to him about what's going on. And they have this whole conversation, and this is where you finally start to see a bit of her redemptive side.
Mm-hmm.
When they're at this little coffee shop, and they have these looks between each other, and you can kind of see that she's realizing that this just random quote unquote loser that, you know, because she's a Kappa, and Kappas wouldn't be seen talking to somebody like this. She starts to see that he's a real person, and you know.
And she, like, assumed he date raped her. Like, she assumed that they had sex, and he's like, nah, I made my roommate sleep in the car and I slept in his bed. And then I just loved that realization in her head of, like, oh my God, he's not a scumbag.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Like, there's just that moment where it's like, yeah, no, there are good people in the world just because you don't see them.
Exactly. So he wants to start writing out a list of potential suspects because he feels that, okay, well, if you figure this out, then maybe this will stop happening.
Mm-hmm.
And basically puts into her head that, oh, well, you have unlimited lives. Like, let's start going through this list or make a list. And she does. And what we get is a pretty fantastic montage. Probably the best part of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Set to, quite honestly, one of my favorite Demi Lovato songs of all time. Confident.
Oh, God.
I do love that song. I'm not even lying about it. I've done it at karaoke.
Oh, man.
Not this past Bear Bus, but last year, that Thursday night. It was the last song of the night. It was the last thing I started stripping to it. You know, you get drunk, it happens. But it's an awesome song, and it worked for what the whole thing was.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's finding herself in trying to sort out who's potentially the killer.
Yeah.
We also get the hot guy that's been, like, texting her nonstop is
essentially trying to make her his beard.
Yes. Is a closeted homosexual when she sees him getting ready to jerk off, which I'm like, it was fairly obvious enough when he's on his bed with the laptop, but then he had to grab the box of tissues. I'm like,
and then somebody calls him and the laptop's facing the window and she's like, and I just love her relief though.
I know.
Like,
yeah,
I love that was the one thing she was like, oh, okay. Like, I loved that moment because she's like, well, never mind. That makes perfect sense. And then she turns around and gets murdered.
And then she, like, you see her go through this list of different people that she thinks it could be, and each time basically figures out that it's not them and crosses them off the list, and she gets killed in, like, the most ridiculous and bizarre ways. My favorite was when the bus hit her and the other bitch.
Oh yeah,
like, there's like, yeah, that wasn't even kill you.
That wasn't even the murderer either. That was just her getting into a cat fight in the middle of the road.
It would have been hysterical had they panned up and you saw the baby mask like driving the bus. But still, yeah.
I really liked it when she had the fucking like camouflage makeup and some goddamn night vision goggles following around the teacher's wife, and I was like,
oh, is that who that was?
That was the teacher's wife. Okay. Yeah, that was. Okay. I think Danielle's her name. He thought it was the teacher's wife.
Gotcha. I was like, I know. I was like, oh, it's just some other random chick.
But no, I love the fact that I'm like, they even had like a fucking face painting. Like, I mean, like army montage. It was good. I want to get this on Blu-ray and see the deleted scenes, because I'm 90% sure they filmed a lot of those.
Oh, I'm sure.
You could tell she had fun doing it too.
I loved when she did the it was like, she's this she's this like elitist Kappa girl. And she, like, in one of her day restarts, she cuts her hair, like does like these crazy pink highlights and whatnot, and is like, all right, I'm gonna rock this today. Like, I'm gonna die, but whatever.
She pulls a Pink Ranger, cuts her hair off. It's mean to the bitchy girls.
takes scissors to it. And
immaculately coiffed.
Thank you for bringing that up, because when Eric and I were talking about it yesterday, I was like, I'm really annoyed at the fact that the female character can just grab a pair of scissors, hack at her hair, and she comes out with like a $500 like blow dry curl, like styled, like amazing do right out of the bathroom, and everybody's like, oh, your hair looks so good. Which, if you watch CinemaSins on YouTube, that is actually called out in the Everything Wrong with the Power Rangers movie.
Oh, it's great.
So that montage was fantastic. Overall, I think it was kitschy. It very much is. It's got a bit of a cult following. It was the number one movie for a week. Yep. So it did do what it was supposed to do.
And honestly, this is a concept. They could do another one, and it's just another person. Like a completely different murderer, completely different group of people. They could do college students, they could do older people, they could do like teenagers. This is something they could do.
It could be the Saw of its generation.
Blumhouse does pretty good horror movies, though. I gotta say, this was a good Blumhouse flick.
I don't think I'd want to see another one, though.
Nah, I'm not. The
way it was done, and again, for being Scott Lobdell, who has done some great work on comics that I have thoroughly enjoyed, to be the screenwriter behind it, to have written the actual movie itself, I think if you had somebody else as the scribe, it would not have the nuances and the beats and the tone that this had.
Yes.
So I think you potentially, again, sacrifice quality for the quantity and for a cash grab. And I don't know if it did as well as that, where it would need or where it would warrant a couple extra movies. Then again, there's a third Maze Runner movie coming out, which I still don't understand how that's possible. But
because the books exist?
I still think that they were pitched it as another type of Hunger Games, and the studio was like, you get $30 million, divide this up amongst your three movies and make them without even like seeing returns on anything, which is like, this is what we're giving you, go for it.
Just so you know, there's a fourth book, so there's probably going to be a fourth movie.
Yep. Wow. And it will probably do just as well as 2 and 3, and 3 isn't even out yet. Anywho, Eric, besides the verbal callback to Groundhog Day, any negatives that you came out of this movie with?
Again, just that, well, kind of that her redemption arc wasn't necessarily how she solved it. I mean, but that would have been verbatim for Groundhog Day. So it's kind of,
I know,
good, but that wasn't what ended up solving it.
It felt wasted, though. It felt wasted. Like, I understand that she remembers all of that, and that for her character growth, it's still there. But I felt like she was able to positively impact these other lives, that even had she made that whole little speech to her roommate and then realized that her roommate was the one that was killing her, mm-hmm. I still feel like it would have been okay, or have a similar, like, have almost an excerpt of that day when she finally does do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it felt like Carter, yes, Carter's going to get that, you know, better tree in his life. But Becky isn't going to have that I stood up for you moment, you know, like, you don't have to be a stick, you know, to be a good person or fit in or do any of that. The gay guy isn't going to be told to get a fine piece of man ass.
She may still go around and do right by people.
Yeah, but this was, like, intentionally, like, I'm going to find these people that I know. Like, she was trying to make all of those things in that day a better thing. Signing the global warming petition, like having the pillow for the frat guy that, you know, passes out on the lawn. Mm-hmm. Did your fraternity make you do that? Did you have to stand 26 hours and sing bottles of beer on the wall?
No, I never had to do that.
No hazing?
I didn't say no hazing. I just said.
Do they make you do sexual acts to get into the fraternity?
Only to the goat.
This went from dirty to wrong really quickly. Really quick.
But there's always a goat. Come on.
Jesus. Senor Goat Fokker. Don't ask. Honestly, that was my biggest negative takeaway from it. Overall, I thought it was really cute and worked well for what it did. And whether or not it was an homage to a Groundhog Day type of feel, which mm-hmm. it was, like, there is no way around that. That's exactly what it was meant to be. And I think that for a younger crowd that has never seen it and never been exposed to it, the verbal callback will maybe give them a minute to say, you know what, let me go take a look for this. What would have been a good move would have been Netflix or Hulu or a streaming service to pick up Groundhog Day and feature it on their headers around that same time, even a week or two after, because you know that somebody's sitting there searching Netflix, and whether or not Netflix has it, I don't know, but I think that would have been a smart little idea for them to get an uptick in watches for it.
Right. I think it did kind of feel, I mean, I didn't know that Scott had been shopping the script and trying to get it made for almost a decade, but I can see that now looking at it, because it definitely feels in the vein of those early 2000 slasher flicks and would have fit right in.
Oh, for sure. And it, so it almost gives you a nostalgia feel in a mm-hmm. sense, because you're like, oh, this really does take me back to a Scream or to I know what you did last summer.
Yeah.
Type of feel, where if it were 2005, 2010, you'd be like, oh, okay, cool, this is in that same area.
We'd have a terrible sequel by now.
Well, yeah, exactly. Probably direct to VHS, because they would have literally they'd have pulled out a VHS just to put it out on that. But yeah, it definitely, I think it worked in that respect. I think it had enough of a nostalgia feel without being nostalgia porn.
Yeah.
BJ, do you have any negative takeaways aside from her redemption arc being taken away from everybody else?
Actually, this actually has to do a little bit with her redemption arc. The fact that she technically killed herself for a guy, and then she condemns the real murderer for murdering her for a guy. I don't know if that's purposeful, like one is willing to murder for a guy and one's willing to sacrifice herself for a guy. I don't know if that's something that was written in it.
There's a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah, but I mean like oh, is her motivation for being a good person is to get a guy? I mean, granted, he's a nice guy, but like,
well, it wasn't so much to get the guy. It was to make sure he lived.
Yeah, to save
the guy.
She's
saving his life.
Okay, I see that now. So she did it to save him, and the other one is doing it to kind of do nothing with him because the other guy didn't want anything to do with it.
Even though we know now that because that serial killer wasn't the killer,
Yeah.
That she still would have died on that day.
Yeah, and so, but yeah. She didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
And she's thinking, okay, I figured this out. Like, this is what's going to happen.
And same for the audience. Like, I audibly gasped when she still woke up, and I was like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when Carter jumps tombs in the hospital and he snapped his neck, I was like, oh my God. I was like, wow, that's just crazy. And then I was almost half expecting the movie to end when she hung herself, like, because of the fact that, like, she did it to herself versus, like, the trigger being
killed.
I was like, there was a little part of me that was like, oh crap, is this how this is gonna go out,
the darkest timeline?
And then it didn't, and she woke up, and I was, and then she did the like giant audible neck crack, and I was like, oh, okay, at least we made humor out of this. Like,
okay, you know? Yeah, I was like, I was actually a little bit relieved she woke up.
Yeah, that definitely was, it was weird, but at the same time, yeah, I felt like one of the biggest negatives definitely is kind of both of what you guys are saying, and just the fact that I get the roommate being the killer. I did not like the cop out of the motive, because she wanted to bang the hot ginger doctor. Like, it just didn't seem, it seemed out of left field. Like, it just kind of, it, I would have been happier with either Tombs or the dad being involved, because, you know, all we got of the dad up until her big redemptive day was these angry phone calls that, and then, like, had he been some part of, like, the mother's murder? Because, again, up until you get all the Tombs information, you have no information about of why her mom is dead. You assume that she's dead because she's watching the video and it's all this. And then they start giving all these pieces to basically spoon feed you the Tombs ending.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they eat the cupcake and then all of a sudden, like, you're like, okay, cool, the movie's over. And she wakes up again and you're like, what the fuck? Like, this was what?
Yep.
And it should have been a giveaway when he was like, well, how did Tombs get free? Nobody knows. Oh, bitch, you should have had all your threads tied up before you went to bed.
Yep.
And she didn't. So, overall, I think it definitely served as a very cute movie. And for a horror movie, that's kind of fun to say, like, it was cute.
Yeah.
So we'll wrap this one up with our reviews. BJ, we'll start with you. Out of 5 flames, what do you give Happy Death Day?
I'll give it a 3.
All right. Eric, what about you?
Yeah, 3. It's good, just not great.
All right. I'll be the contrarian. I'll give it 3.5 flames.
Ooh.
That extra half flame just for funsies.
An ember.
just a little spark on some kindling over on the other side. So that'll wrap up our It and Happy Death Day post Halloween movie review. If you've enjoyed this, please make sure you tell your friends about the show. Share us on your favorite social platform. Retweet us, do all of that fun stff. Check out patreon.com/nerdyshow in order to help support the network. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with our November. Dear God, it's so scary to say that we're in November already. With our November full cast recording, hopefully you'll get to hear all of our voices when we come back. The holiday season is always crazy, and trying to get everybody in the same place at the same time is not always
conducive.
It's not always easy. But hopefully we'll be all back here, and hopefully you will be joining us for our next episode of Flame On. And with that, we say peace out. Bye.
Bye. Bye.